compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
All right, we are back in action for the next hour or so. Well, 58 minutes, but who's counting? So call this number. We'll get you on the air, 888-914-9149. That number is sponsored by Catholic Order of Foresters, 888-914-9149. I have some emails I want to get to. First, though, some phone calls. We'll start with Dee Dee in New York. Good morning, Dee Dee.
Good morning, Patrick.
Yes, hi.
I just wanted to say that I had been calling you because I was going through the OCIA program since last year. And when I started listening to you, and I also called back a second time to talk to you about like the names that I could choose, you know, the saints and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So I just want to let you know I got confirmed last weekend at
Wonderful.
Saturday, and I just wanted to thank you so much for all of your support, and I love listening to you. So I just wanted to say that to you.
You're so kind, Dee Dee.
I don't really have any questions or anything like that, but I just wanted to share the moment with you. And I'm so happy.
You're so kind. And I'm delighted for you. So this would have been at the Easter Vigil Mass then? Is that when you were confirmed?
Yes.
Beautiful. Yes. And
so
now that you're fully
much.
Initiated, so you've been baptized, you received the Holy Eucharist, and you were confirmed.
Yes.
So the next question I have to ask is, how do you feel? What is it like to be so fully in God's grace the way you are right now?
Well, you know, it was very interesting. I used to always sit in the back of the church when I would go to Mass because I just was very, you know, shy or whatever. Mm-hmm. And but when you're a catechumen and you have to go do your three scrutiny masses, so I sat in the front. And then I enjoyed watching the Eucharist being blessed, and it makes me want to sit in the front now. And so
Fantastic.
When I actually took the Eucharist, it was just amazing, and I really understood it. You know what I mean?
I do. Yeah. How
and, you know,
thrilling
after learning
for you
about it, and, you know, in class, and then doing it, and so sitting in the front doesn't make me nervous anymore. It makes me like appreciate sitting that close to God, if that makes sense.
It makes complete
I don't know.
Sense.
Very, very. And the adoration, mm-hmm. The adoration on Holy Thursday was just wonderful.
That's so great.
It was just beautiful.
How God works.
The entire Holy Week was just, it really, I'm so happy. And I'm so glad that you and all of the other broadcasters are on the air. Father Simon, everyone, the other gentleman that's after Father Simon, I'm so sorry his name escapes me, but he's very good as well. But
we have several. So we have Patrick Connolly and Father Simon and Kel Clark and Father
Kel
Rocky.
Clark, yes, Kel Clark,
yeah,
right.
Kel Clark.
Right, Father Rocky, yes. And the people who do the rosary at the end of the evening and, you know, every night and pray for people. It's just a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful radio station. And I'm just so happy that I found you and God and all of that. So
wow.
I'm so happy. Thank you.
Well, Dee Dee, we are happy for you. I can tell you
wonderful
that for sure.
Have you.
And we're like family now, aren't we?
Yes. And I just hope that, like, if there are other people who want to become Catholics, that, you know, they don't give up, you know, and they take the time and do it. Because I know some people say it takes too long and, you know, to become a member. But I understand why you go through it, because you want to make sure the person's serious about it. And so, you know, if there's anybody out there that feels, you know, that it's not worth it, it is worth the year to do it, you know. Mm-hmm. And once you take that time to do it and then take the Eucharist for the first time, it's just a wonderful experience. And I hope
yes.
that other people, if they're listening and they're wondering if they should, go ahead and do it. It's worth it.
Well, you are absolutely right, Dee Dee. And I hope many people are hearing what you're saying right now and will act accordingly.
Okay, Patrick. Well, you have a good day, and everyone else there. I hope Father Simon's feeling better. I think he was ill.
Yeah, he's still a bit under the weather, from what I understand. I mean, he hasn't returned to his show yet, so we want to give him as much time as he needs to recuperate. But
okay.
I'm sure if he's listening, he's smiling right now, knowing that you're saying a prayer for him.
Oh, absolutely. I will continue to do that. And
all
for
right.
you as well.
Thank you, Dee Dee.
Thank you.
Your enthusiasm is contagious. Everyone's smiling here at Relevant Radio. Thank you for that. That's beautiful. Let's go to Lou in Fremont, California. Good morning, Lou.
Hey, Patrick. I had a question about discernment and fatherhood. I recently graduated out of college and did some things I was not supposed to do with my girlfriend. And turns out we're going to be having a child soon.
One thing leads to another, right?
Definitely. Yeah.
Actions have consequences. They're all different kinds of ways of putting it, but this is an important life lesson that you've learned.
Yeah, it definitely is. Sorry, it's a little loud. I'm waiting for the train. So in terms of, you know, getting married, long story short, her family lives on the East Coast. I live here in California. She also lives here, but she wants to go home. And honestly, I don't really want to go to the East Coast, but I realize, you know, she might want to be with her family during this time.
So, and you and she are getting married, or you are married?
No, we're not married yet.
Are you getting married?
That's something we are talking about and something we are trying to figure out. But that was one of my questions, is how would we discern, you know, if marriage is the right choice for us, as well as how do I discern whether I should go to the East Coast or if I should stay here through like a Catholic lens? How would I go about making that decision?
Well, I mean, there are a lot of variables, of course. Are you working a job that you really would like to stay with, or are you sort of at a point in life where you could switch careers if you moved to a different area?
I would be able to switch jobs in a different area. I would be able to get a job over there as well. But I do like what I'm doing right now, and there is an opportunity that could present itself in the next few months that would make us stable. But even though I wouldn't make us stable, she still wants to go back home.
And does she want to go home or does she want to go home because she really feels that's where she wants to live for sure?
I know that's not where she wants to live permanently, but for right now, that's where she wants to be with her family during this time. Because she's alone over here.
One other question. Where are you on the spectrum of pursuing marriage? Are you just talking about it right now, or are you seriously looking at getting married in the next 6 months or a year or so?
I think we definitely are seriously thinking about getting married within the next year or two. It's definitely a discussion we're having.
Right. Okay. So I can't say you should do this or, you know, definitely do this. But one thought that comes to my mind is, if you intend to marry her, and I think it would be ideal if the two of you got married because you're the parents of this child. So you have a commitment, and better to live out that commitment with her as your wife, all other things being equal. So if she's intent upon going back to the East Coast and you're free enough that you could go and be with her and prepare for marriage, that sounds like a good idea. The reason I say that is because if she moves to the East Coast and you stay on the West Coast and you're not working with her toward marriage, she might meet another guy. She might grow cool in her affection for you. She might have other people talking to her and telling her, no, don't do this or whatever. So if you really intend to be with her, that's your goal, then I would, and if she's insistent upon going there, then I would say, if I were in a position like yours, I would seriously consider going and then build your life together. And you could always move back to the West Coast, but I could see some risks involved if she were to go there and you stay where you were. Sounds like things could start to unravel between the two of you. I'm not predicting that. I'm just saying that's a possibility that comes to my mind.
Yeah, I definitely think so too. It would be ideal for us to be together wherever, you know, she would want to go.
Right. So think about it, pray about it. Doesn't sound like you've got a whole lot of time before you have to decide. But, you know, if you go there and you're with her and you're working toward marriage. So let's say one of two things happens. Let's say you're there with her in Hackensack and you're going to marriage prep classes and you're doing all that. And you realize this is not really what I want. Well, if things don't turn out the way you want, then you can always move back to California. But it could be that you go back to Hackensack and you live near her, not with her, but you live near her and you build your relationship and you plan for your wedding and you do your marriage prep and you get married and you live happily ever after. That would be the best possible outcome, right?
Well, I definitely agree with that.
Yeah. So I can't obviously tell you what to do, but that's my impression based on what you're telling me.
Okay. And then you recommend, you know, stay in prayer.
Of course. Yeah. How old are the two of you? I don't think I asked you that.
I'm 23. She's 22.
Okay. So yeah, you're marriage age. You're of marriage age and you have a baby on the way and you have obligations. So I would encourage you to think in those terms. What do I need to do to make this happen? What do I need to do to form my family, establish my family, my marriage, and move forward in life? Because we have a baby that we need to take care of. And that baby deserves mom and dad together. You know?
Yeah.
So think about those things.
Okay. Thank you, Patrick. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, Lou. Hang in there. Yeah, just to pause on that thought for a moment. Actions have consequences, and one thing leads to another. And if you find yourself with a baby on the way, you need to make plans. I'm saying you rhetorically, whoever you are, you need to make plans that take into account this new life that you've been blessed with, even though maybe what you did for that new life to come into existence was bad. You need to make your plans with that innocent child in mind. And, you know, the more as I'm pondering the situation that he's in, and I'm thinking about how many other people have been in the same situation. It's not new. I mean, it's not unique. This is a very common thing. But don't neglect to take into account the need and the right, really, of that unborn child to know his mother and father, if at all possible. Sometimes it's not possible. Sometimes it's, you know, the wrong thing if the father's a criminal or, you know, a drug addict or something. Sometimes it just doesn't work out the way you hope it would. But I don't get that impression with this last caller. So just some added thoughts on that. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Alfred now in Boise, Idaho. Good morning, Alfred.
Good morning. Can you hear me, Patrick?
I can, yes. Loud and clear.
Awesome. Hey, say hello to Cyrus, too.
Okay, please feel free.
Hi, little Cyrus.
Hi there, Alfred.
Hi. Hey, you guys always give me a smile and a good, good Catholic laugh every day.
Hey, that's a Catholic laugh right there, too. Well, that's great,
yeah,
Alfred.
Thank you,
How
guys.
Can we be of service today?
No, Patrick, you know, you said whenever I called you, I met you before. And here's the thing. I met you maybe 5 or 6 years ago.
Okay.
In Orange County in the mountains. And you said, if you ever call in, Alfred, just tell me that I met you in the hamburger line.
Oh, now let's think about this. There's not too many mountains in Southern. I mean, there are some in Southern Orange County. Where were we?
I don't remember. I don't remember, but it was in the mountains. There was some kind of event and there was mass up there and it was all outdoor, of course, and
okay.
I know it's a long time
ago.
Oh,
I know. Yeah. Was that at the Santiago Retreat Center?
Yes.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, I was there, and I was actually recovering from some clinical depression, and I was there with a friend of mine that took me there because it was helping me recover.
That's
and,
good.
And you are actually one of the persons, thank God, praise God, that helped me through my depression. So I want to thank you.
You worked as a mediator
of Jesus Christ.
Thank you, Alfred.
Christ has no hands but ours. on this earth. So thank you, Patrick.
And plus, we had a good hamburger to boot, right? That wasn't a bad thing.
Oh, gosh, that was such a great day. I actually got some sleep that day by the swimming pool. They had a swimming pool over there, and I hadn't been getting any sleep, and I laid by the pool and I actually got a nap.
Good for you.
To be honest.
You got a hamburger, you got a nap, we had a nice chat. It sounds like a good day.
It was. But, you know, I do have a question. This is my first time calling them. I'm excited, so here we go. I'm actually I'm a cradle Catholic, and when I grew up, I actually was, from what I see now myself in the past, lukewarm and cafeteria. Those were cafeteria Catholic.
Right. So I'll have a hamburger, please, and some French fries. Hey, you know, Alfred, I would love to talk to you for an hour, but I'm watching the clock. I see we have a break coming. So I keep interrupting you. I know you had a question. What was that?
Here's the question. What is considered works? Can like prayer or baptism be considered a works?
Okay. So you mean works like in a biblical sense, like good works?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Works are things that you do in grace. In other words, as it says in Ephesians 2:8-9, for by grace you have been saved through faith. This is a gift of God. It is not of works, lest any man should boast. So properly speaking, in a biblical context, works are the things that you do in grace, and that grace, of course, is a gift from God, and it enables you to do things that are meritorious in God's eyes. So that would include faith itself. Faith is a work, meaning that it is something that you do. You have faith in God. Now, even your faith is a gift. So without that gift of grace preceding your faith, even if you were to have some sort of faith in God, if it wasn't the gift of God's grace, it wouldn't be a saving kind of faith. It wouldn't be a salvific or meritorious kind of faith. But that's the kind we're talking about. So your faith is a work. Your almsgiving is a work. Your praying for other people is a work. You're doing the things that Jesus specifically says to do in Matthew 25, feeding the hungry, giving drink to the thirsty, clothing the naked, visiting the sick and the imprisoned, welcoming the stranger. Those are works. And those, by the way, are known as corporal works. Corporal means bodily. So those are things that help the person's body. You need food. You need clothes, you need a place to live, etc. So we call those the corporal works of mercy. Then there are also the spiritual works of mercy. So works can also include, and do include, when you pray for somebody else. You don't even have to open your mouth. If you're praying for somebody, that's a work. That's a spiritual work. When you give good counsel, you advise somebody to do the right thing, that's a good work. If you, by your good example, are showing people, even if you're not saying something verbally, but you're showing them how to live as a follower of Jesus Christ, that's a work. So the list can be open-ended, but primarily what it means is you participating and allowing the grace of God to have its effects through you, through your generosity, through your good counsel, through your good example, through your corporal works of mercy and your prayers and all those things. Those are what the Bible refers to as works. It's not crass works. You can't earn your salvation. You can't work your way to heaven or any silly notion like that. But as St. Paul says in Ephesians 2, for by grace you have been saved through faith. This is a gift. So your faith is a gift, your works are a gift, and it's God's grace that underlie all of those things. Hey, Alfred, I wish we could talk longer, but I've got to take a break, and I'll do that. Thanks again for the great memory of getting that hamburger with you. I know, right where we were at the Santiago Retreat Center in Southern California, not too far from St. Michael's Abbey, by the way. Thank you, Alfred. Hang in there and keep on trucking. This hour supported by Notre Dame Federal Credit Union. Join the nation's largest Catholic-oriented credit union and receive $200 when you add a direct deposit. Learn more at notredamefcu.com/join. That's NotreDameFCU.com/join.
This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and RelevantRadio.com. Get connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now.
Let's see. I have a note here that came in a little while ago. Actually, this morning. It's from Rebecca. I'll just leave it at that. I know where you're writing in from, Rebecca, but for your own, you know, privacy, I'll just leave it at that. And she says, I recently got diagnosed with endometriosis, and per my doctor, my only solution is contraceptives. She indicated that I could use contraceptives for a couple of months to see if that will help my pain. If that does help, then that would be the root. If it does not help, then she would look further into the issue. What are your thoughts on this? I am 41 years old, married with two children. Looking forward to your thoughts and guidance. Thank you. Well, thank you for your confidence, first of all, Rebecca. Here are my thoughts on this issue. So knowing, of course, that the pill is abortifacient often, maybe not every single time, but it is often abortifacient. If that's the kind of contraceptive she's referring to, I presume it is because I've heard of this prescription before. The church says that you could morally, you could, without being immoral, make use of this as a therapy for the problem of endometriosis. The problem, or one of the problems, is that, of course, being a married woman, naturally, I think, assuming that you and your husband live as husband and wife, the danger arises that if you, even though this is prescribed for you, the hormonal pill, it would, without even your intending it, it would still be abortifacient in some instances, maybe most. So for that reason, unless you and your husband decided to live as brother and sister for the interim, which is not easy, can be done, and in some cases it's the heroic choice because of health issues and things like that. So, I mean, it can be done, and it wouldn't be beyond one's ability to do, but it's not easy to do. But if you were to do that, then that would eliminate that problem of this prescription of taking their hormonal pill for the endometriosis. So you morally can do that. It's not doing something inherently immoral. But that would be my word of caution, would be if you were to decide to do that, that I would encourage you and your husband to make that decision that you will live as brother and sister until the time has passed where the pill could be an abortifacient. So with that in mind, I would also suggest that you take a look at an article that's available at the National Catholic Bioethics Center. It's not a long article, so I'll just take the liberty of reading a few sections from it for you briefly, because I think it will help clarify what you're looking at here. So it's under the title, Making Sense of Bioethics, The Pill as Healthcare? Physicians will sometimes prescribe a hormonal regimen in the form of a hormonal contraceptive like the pill to treat certain gynecological problems. Among them would be endometriosis. It lists a few other ones, but endometriosis is one of them. In these cases, the pill is not used as a contraceptive, but as a therapy for a medical condition. This can be morally permissible under the principle of double effect, which allows for the treatment of a serious medical problem, which is the good effect, while tolerating its unintended consequences when other less harmful treatments are not available. In this case, the unintended consequences would be the impeding of one's fertility and the potential health risks and side effects of the pill. That would be the evil effect. Now, this is not directly referring to the abortifacient quality of the pill. This is referring to the harm that it does to the woman's body and the consequences that arise from taking the pill. Okay, so just keep that in mind. Married couples may sometimes struggle with the question of whether a pathology is serious enough to warrant the therapeutic use of the pill. The wife of one couple I worked with reflected on the matter and concluded, yes, and she gives some description of the problems that she was facing that I won't read on the air. But she says, yes, this is really bad, but it's not so debilitating that my husband and I can't manage. And we'd really prefer, morally and medically speaking, not to get mixed up with the powerful pharmaceutical like the pill. Other treatments besides the pill may at times be available to remedy these medical conditions without having to impede fertility. Some young women may be content to opt for a treatment that also offers more latitude for sexual activity. Approaching the medical use of the pill in this way can raise concerns about ambiguous intentions. And here it goes into the question of what I talked about earlier about being sexually active and taking the pill at the same time. Even though you're taking the pill for this other issue, it poses a serious risk for the life of any unborn children that might be conceived. So it goes on from there, but it gives you point by point, you know, what the specifics are to take into account. It also brings up some things you should be aware of. The pill is detrimental to women's health in light of its frequent side effects, include weight gain, headaches, depression, as well as heightened and well-documented risks of thrombotic stroke, myocardial infarction, heart attack, and breast cancer. The International Agency for Research on Cancer, an arm of the World Health Organization, classifies hormonal contraception as a group 1 carcinogen. To sum up, he says, this is the author, Father Tad Pihalchik. He says, the use of the pill for medical, that is, non-contraceptive purposes, requires a disciplined approach to the matter. Alternative medical therapy should be seriously considered. The great good of fertility should be respected. And unspoken sexual agendas should not be allowed to trump the duty to exercise moral responsibility and sound medical judgment. We'll get a link to this article posted for you, Rebecca, so you can read it and think about it, you know, at a slower pace. But I just want to emphasize that if you decide to go this direction, even though there are some potentially serious side effects from taking the pill, my heartfelt advice would be that you and your husband forego sexual intimacy for as long as you're on the pill, because of the reasons that I just mentioned. Now, the NAPRO technology, it's N-A-P-R-O, NAPRO technology, if you look that up, you can get in touch with physicians, perhaps in your area, there are some, who can offer you alternatives from the pill that will help you treat endometriosis. I don't have any medical knowledge, so I can only refer you to a NAPRO technology oriented physician, an OBGYN, for example. But I would look into it because it may well be that there are other options that can help you overcome this problem that would not harm your body and would not put your marriage intimacy on hold the way taking the pill would. So check that out. And by all means, if you have further questions, the National Catholic Bioethics Center, they're more than happy to take phone calls and give you a consultation if you're interested in doing that. One other resource, Rebecca, is One More Soul. Their website is onemoresoul.com, and they have a whole library of good literature that will talk about what the pill does to the body. I'm looking at one of their articles right now. It's called How the Pill and Other Contraceptives Work. So it answers questions. It really makes it more clear, especially if you're considering that as a treatment for endometriosis. These are things to take into account. So it's scientific, it's medical, it's well footnoted and well documented. And that too could be part of what you take into account. Thanks for the email. I appreciate it very much. Let's go to Fred in Wisconsin. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning. Comments. Not overly brief, to the gentleman who has whose girlfriend is pregnant.
Okay.
I found myself in that situation 23 years ago. By the grace of God, I made the right decision. In truth, I couldn't imagine my child growing up under another man's roof. And
yeah.
At my wedding, I remember praying for the grace to be a good husband and father. But I just want to give a short story, if I may. First of all, when my daughter was about 3 years old, we used to drive by a church on the way to school, and she wanted to go to church. So long story short, it was her that got this lukewarm Catholic back to church. I became a catechist, and my mother-in-law was confirmed Catholic on an Easter vigil, okay? But here's the point I want to make, and I told kids this in class, if I may. You did not, with your girlfriend, just create a baby. You participated in the creation of an immortal soul. That's something the angels can't do. And you are intimately responsible for where that soul ends up in the next life. And imagine you make it, and that child doesn't. That soul doesn't. I don't know how that couldn't taint all of eternity. Thank you for letting me make my point, because I think it's critical.
Well, I would agree with you, Fred. And what a clear way of explaining it. Most young men are not so clear in their thinking. I don't think I was.
No, most young people are. No.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you brought that up, Fred. Very good of you to do so. And I have to ask you, so all these years later, are you and the missus still happily together? And tell me about your child.
Oh, my goodness. I have the happiest marriage I've ever heard of. My missus is the mother that every kid wishes they had. Our house was full of children every weekend, other people's children for sleepovers. My daughter, this is worldly, graduated with a 3.3 GPA as an electrical engineer, one of the hardest majors known. That's what I got for making the right decision.
Good for you. Well, I'm so happy, and I know God is even happier than that. God bless you, Fred. Thank you. Hey, by the way, I want to acknowledge those of you who have written in, Monique, for example, and Larissa, and let's see who else, a few others of you. Not Rebecca, but Larissa and Monique and a couple of others who are writing in to say, tell her that endometriosis can be cured in other ways. I did mention that, don't forget. And that the pill is not an ideal way to go. Yeah, I definitely told her that. Told her about the risks, the health risks, the consequences, not to mention the abortifacient quality. So that all of you who are writing me emails right now to tell me that, please go back and listen and you'll hear me say those very things. It's all important. And what you're saying is important, but I did include that in my commentary to Rebecca. So let's go now to Teresa in Modesto. Good morning, Teresa.
Good morning. Hi. I've got a happy story for you, Patrick, and it has to do with your show.
Okay.
I was sitting in the same room that I'm sitting in right now, and in a beautiful lit room, and I was praying to God that my adopted, what we say, Hanai daughter from Papua New Guinea, that God would guide me to find the right full scholarship tuition-free for her. She's a nurse that I've supported since she was 4 years old and could not get out of the country. Okay. And she's practiced in.
She was a nurse at 4 years old? Wow, they start them early over there.
Did I say that? She was.
Maybe I misunderstood you, but it sounded like that.
I supported her as an adopted parent since she was four, but only now since December have had her in the United States. And she did get through nursing school and she practiced 3 years as a COVID nurse, but she hasn't finished her BSN. So I prayed and I walked two feet basically into my bedroom and there's your show and there's an advertisement. Tuition-free program, University of Mary, North Dakota, nursing school for a BSN. So I thought, oh my God, that took 2 seconds for him to answer my prayers because she keeps getting partial scholarships, but not full. I'm a retired aid worker, so I don't have the income for full scholarship. So I called the school and told them the story of this brilliant young girl from a tribal village. She is the first to make it out of the country from her state to the United States. Well, they awarded her the full scholarship. She will be attending this very special program at the University of Mary. So this was during your program segment. And all I can say is God graces us with guidance, and he gave it to us in divine intervention at that moment. And
that is so beautiful. I'm so happy to hear that, Teresa. University of Mary in for the win. That's awesome.
They've got a great kid from a tribe who can help the reservations there.
That's so fantastic, Teresa. Well, I'm so happy for you and for her and for the University of Mary. Thank you. This hour is sponsored by Christendom College's free principles classes. Sign up for a free online class on Holy Scripture today at NewTestamentFoundations.com. Learn to read the Bible with the mind of the church at NewTestamentFoundations.com.
This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and RelevantRadio.com.
This is a great song, Cyrus.
It's one of Tom Petty's best.
Did you know about this song before I told you how great it was?
I know what you're doing.
Yeah, I'm always doing something. 888-914-9149. Let's go
when
now.
When you say that this is one of Tom Petty's best songs?
Oh, without question.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Let's see. Let's go to Marie in Fort Myers, Florida. Good morning, Marie.
Good morning, Patrick. I'm just calling in for some validity or insight on what I've heard. And it's about a Jewish rancher in Texas that has two red heifers, called three Levite priests in from Jerusalem. They took the heifers back, and they are going to be sacrificed at the Jewish Passover on the 22nd.
Okay.
And is this the beginning of the 3 days of darkness where this war is just going to like...
All right. So the red heifer, that's what you're wondering about. Is that sort of a harbinger of terrible things that would be unleashed if that were to happen? Would it be some kind of a trigger or a portent that would tell us that 3 days of darkness or some terrible chastisement would happen? Is that your question?
Well, I don't know. Yeah, I guess it would be, because I heard that nobody has ever had the red heifer, and this is two red heifers without blemish, and the Jewish Levite priest came to bring him back to Jerusalem, and yes it is the two red heifers, and I just, you know, I, like, there's all this stuff that's going on, and then I don't know, I just don't want to, like, what's the word, you know, just like be filled with fear, you know, with just, you know, hearing about the eclipse and, you know, the seven planets in line and blah, blah, blah.
So. Okay. Fair enough. So that's what I kind of figured. So the red heifer is something that comes from, at least in terms of people knowing about it, comes from Numbers 19, verse 3. In which it says, in verse 3 is the specific place where it mentions the slaughtering of the red heifer. So it says, this is the statute of the law which the Lord has commanded. Tell the people of Israel to bring you a red heifer without defect, in which there is no blemish, and upon which a yoke has never come. And you shall give her to Eleazar the priest, and she shall be taken outside the camp and slaughtered before him. And Eleazar the priest shall take some of her blood with his finger and sprinkle some of the blood toward the font of the front of the tent and the meeting 7 times, and the heifer shall be burned in his sight. Her skin, her flesh, and her blood with her dung shall be burned. And the priest shall take the cedar wood and hyssop and scarlet stuff and cast them into the midst of the burning heifer. And then he goes on to describe the after effects, washing the clothes and all those kinds of things. So the point of this red heifer is that it's symbolic of the cleansing of the people through the sacrifice of this little animal. Now, in biblical prophecy, there are many people who say that when this phenomenon, which is extremely rare as I understand it, but when this phenomenon is, when it happens again, that it will somehow be a portent that would foretell or be a precursor to the end times. Now, I'm not sure that that is the case, but I do know that this is something that many people have said and are currently saying. This ties in with the effort on the part of some religious Jews to rebuild the temple, which also is part of biblical prophecy. The rebuilding of the temple is, does this red heifer in some way mean that there will now be a temple built? I don't know how that could happen with this red heifer, only because it takes a while to build a temple, not to mention that there is a big old mosque. There are actually two or three of them sitting on the Temple Mount, and those are going to have to go away, presumably at least, in order for there to be a new temple built. And the religious Jews who are seeking to build this temple also are doing so in a prophetic sense. They think that if by doing this they can restore the animal sacrifices, restore the priesthood, restore all of the basic, the sacrificial economy of the Mosaic ceremonial law, that that will hasten the arrival of the Messiah. Now, you and I know the Messiah has already come. That's Jesus Christ. He is our Messiah and Redeemer. And he came and fulfilled the Old Testament prefigurements of sacrifice with his own sacrifice on the cross. So it's a misguided notion on the part of the Jews, and it's even more misguided on the part of Protestants, not all of whom, but many of whom are pushing and pushing and pushing for this. They want the new temple rebuilt. They want the animal sacrifices started again. And we don't want that, because Jesus fulfilled all of that, and it would be wrong, especially for Christians, to try to reinstitute something that Jesus himself has already perfected and fulfilled. And the reason that they want to do that is because they believe in their misguided way that when the temple is rebuilt and when the animal sacrifices resume, that that will trigger the pre-tribulation rapture. And the reason they're so gung-ho for all this to take place, again, they're deeply misguided. They think that if when this happens, they all get raptured out, then the Antichrist machine starts going in earnest and the persecutions start. But hey, we're going to be in heaven watching with popcorn up there to see what happens. None of that is good. None of it. So the real sort of backdrop to this red heifer involving the Jews and also these Protestants, that is the context here. Now let's take a look at the Catholic component. Is it the case that the punishments that are foretold, a chastisement, a warning, 3 days of darkness, there are a number of different things that are rolling around in people's minds, will this trigger that? I don't think so. I don't think it's going to trigger that, because God's timetable does not depend upon human activity, like putting a quarter in a gumball machine and you turn the handle and out comes a gumball. That's not how God works. There are portents, there are signs in the book of Revelation. We see seals and bowls that are emptied and trumpets that are blown. And those are heavenly realities that will come to pass in due time. And we have to wait patiently on the Lord. But for your purposes, Marie, I would strongly encourage you, because you mentioned being nervous and worried and things like that. This is one of the inevitable, it seems, byproducts of the YouTube videos promoting the 3 days of darkness and the websites that are constantly promoting dire prophecies and, you know, the warning and the 3 days of darkness and the chastisement and all. It keeps people whipped into this kind of perpetual sense of worry and fear. And that is not from the Holy Spirit. Worry and fear and anxiety and all of those things, it's not from the Holy Spirit. So if it's if this discussion about red heifers and all this stuff, if it's causing you that, my advice, heartfelt, would be stop watching those YouTube videos, stop reading those books, stop going to those websites. And this is how they make their money. This is what they do. They keep people ginned up into this constant state of anxiety. And if they say, well, no, we don't, we're just trying to tell people the truth, okay, fair enough. But the net result is you've got all these people who are beside themselves with worry. And I'll leave you with this thought. Far better that you do the things that Jesus said, be a good wife, be a good mother, be a good widow, be a good student, love God with all your heart, mind, and strength, love your neighbor as yourself, pray the rosary, give alms, be joyful, receive the sacraments, and all of those things that the Lord tells us to do. And you know what will happen, Marie? Let's say that the 3 days of darkness is 1 month away. You're going to be ready for whatever happens. Now, let's say it's 1,000 years away. Okay, you're not going to live to see it in any case if it's 1,000 years away. But let's say it's next week or next month. You will be ready for whatever God has in store for us if you are faithfully following your calling in life. You love God with all your heart, mind, and strength. You love your neighbors, yourself. You're giving alms. You're receiving the sacraments. If you do those things and never take a look at a single YouTube video or a single book that's going to keep you anxious and up at night, or a website that's going to do that, you will be ready. Consequently, or conversely, there are people who will be spending all their waking moments with these books and these websites and these YouTube videos and these podcasts and all this stuff. And the odd thing is they won't be ready because they will be wasting time and energy on something they can't control and kind of feeding at the trough of these constant promoting of these things that may or may not happen in our lifetime. And some of these people who do that will not be ready for when this happens, if it should happen in our lifetime. So that's my heartfelt advice, would be just unplug from these things. Your life will be so much better. You'll be happier. The Lord doesn't want you to know the day or the hour anyway. So why get all wrapped up in that stuff? Let it play out. Jesus, I trust in you. That's the way I would promote this. Now, there are some people for whom it may be for scholarly purposes or for me to be able to talk about it in some way on the radio. There might be some reason to be conversant in that literature and to be familiar with it. But if it's ruling your life, then I would cut it loose and just stay close to Jesus and everything will be well. Thanks, Marie. I appreciate that. Let's go to Reba in Roseville, California. Hi, Reba.
Good morning, Patrick. I actually been listening to you talking with Marie, and I think you might have just answered my question, but I'll paraphrase my question quickly just to double check. So yesterday, you in your show talked about an audiobook that you've been reading, and you recommended it. It's a woman that compiled a bunch of information on nuclear war and what might happen.
Yes.
And I was just contemplating that because I stopped watching the news around the time that I started having kids. We now have four. For that very reason, it just caused way too much anxiety. Some people say I live under a rock, but I don't care. with all the depression that's been going around, especially in the last 3 years, I just find it much better to do that. But when the war broke out in Ukraine, I was also listening to Drew Mariani a lot, and it gave me a lot of anxiety because of that talk about impending nuclear war and what might happen if this war in Ukraine goes much farther. And I had made the mistake of looking up a nuclear war movie and watched that and then thought, oh, that was a mistake. Okay. So I guess you gave...
You kind of faded away there. Are you still with us, Reba?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah. I heard you say you kind of, and then you just sort of faded. So I didn't hear anything after that.
So my question really is, for someone like you, when you go and read a book like that,
how does it affect me? Or how do I keep from being...
How do you keep from falling into that pit of despair and constant worry and angst?
Yeah, thank you for asking the question, Reba. So the simple answer is prayer. Prayer, prayer, prayer. Because I realize I can't control any of these things. And I also recognize that there is, you know, we all have a kind of appetite that we want to know, ooh, what are the gory details? You know, what does this blood moon thing mean? Or what does it mean for the potential disasters that could happen? We do all have a kind of appetite for that. I think you're smart, though, that you're curbing your appetite by intentionally staying free from those inputs. But so let me just briefly mention the book. The book is called Nuclear War, A Scenario. It's by Annie Jacobson. And I really do appreciate this book because it is hair-raising to imagine just how precarious things really are when it comes to the possibility of nuclear war and what would really happen. So for me, to, I think this is my answer to your question. It causes me to pray more, much more for peace. And Our Lady said that. She said, pray for peace, pray for peace, pray the rosary, pray the rosary. So it is, it, in an odd kind of way, reading this book has invigorated that aspect of my prayer life because it's brought to my mind the reality of what we're up against. And so I know it may sound like I'm saying one thing and doing another, but if the net effect is it brings you greater peace in the sense of the need for prayer, then I think that's a good thing. I wish I had more time, Reba. God bless you and your beautiful family. God bless you. And call another time, please. Maybe we'll pick it up on the other side. For the moment, though, I'll pray for you. Please pray for me. God bless you.
I'd say that was a pretty successful broadcast.